Maine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Well, look at that. It's a sunny morning here on the Gulf Coast. And, you know, it's already what? Oh, my goodness. It's 87, 88 degrees outside already. That's what happens as we're moving into Gulf summer. And, you know, we kind of tripped over. I don't know if you noticed last week. We tripped over into Gulf summer. You can celebrate the beginning of summer with the rest of the country, but it is not their summer. It is your summer. It is Gulf summer. June 20th. That's about it. June 15th, June 20th. Every year kind of flips over. You know what happens in the forecast? Look at the forecast for next week. Don't go to your silly app. Your silly app doesn't have a clue where you are or what the weather is like where you are. Go to the National Weather Service, where they have a much better sense of what's going on. The rest of the folks derive their forecast from the National Weather Service, by the way, and they don't do a very good job of it because they've never been to Mobile. They don't know what it's like in Mobile. The National Weather Service has an office here, so they know what it's like. And look at their forecast, and what you're going to see is every day this coming week, there's a chance of rain. 20%. Up to 40%, 50%, depending on the day, 20, 30, 40, 50, every day, every day. You know what else you're going to see? Look at those night temperatures. Now, to the end of the week, they cool off a little bit for various reasons, but look at the temperatures. Ooh, look at the low temperature tonight, not the high temperature. That's, you're trained all wrong. Look at the night temperatures and look at how high the night temp, 78 degrees, 79 degrees. In the Mobile area, 77, 78, 79 degrees. That's the low temperature. That's the low temperature. Ooh. That's the definition of Gulf summer. It's those high night temperatures makes a huge difference for a lot of things. I remind you that tomatoes, they just quit producing at temperatures like that. They just can't tolerate it. They don't, the pollen just gets all gummed up. It can't operate at those kind of temperatures. So you're going to quit producing tomatoes. Your tomatoes are going to begin just dying from diseases. There's not much you can do except to select tomato varieties. You can call me and ask what kind. This is the Gulf summer, the time for okra, the time for field peas, the time for eggplants, the time for tropical vegetables. Man, we ought to talk about some of the great tropical vegetables growing in my garden. The time for tropical flowers. Great time for the garden. The gingers are going to be doing great stuff here just right away. It's that Gulf summertime. Great time to be on the Gulf Coast. Polecat's back. You know, I saw he's been out on his motorcycle. Went up to Cheehaw. I hope that was good. That was good. I love going up to Cheehaw. Good to have you guys back with us. We're going to talk about a lot of things this morning. We're going to talk about trees. We seem like we talk about trees a lot. We have my good buddy Chris Francis on a lot, and I think he's going to show up this morning, and we'll be around to talk about it. Peter Toler with the city is likely to be with us this morning. You know why? Because, we got drama in the trees again. We got drama in the trees. We're going to try to sort that out. We're going to try to figure it out. You know, and but there's lots of things going on in the garden besides trees. Trees are important to us in on the Gulf Coast. Wherever we are, the trees are important. So we're going to talk about them, try to figure out how to be sane about trees, how to live with trees, how to help trees live with us. That's a big problem. But, you know, I want to talk about animals. So I'm going to talk about animals for just a little bit. Because I got chickens. Oh, boy, I could do a whole show on chickens. I'm back in the chicken business. I'm in the chicken business again. It's a mistake. I've got some problems because I can't figure out how to take care of them all the time. It's Look, I just decided I couldn't live without chickens. Could not live without chickens. So I've got, 15 of them. And boy, they're growing. Just amazing how fast they grow. They're in a little box now. I'm going to have to put them out. But you know, I'm going to have to think about this. I'm going to have to think about this because there's this other animal that I have, no matter where I am, no matter where I have my chickens, it's called the raccoon. And boy, raccoons are just a major nightmare for chickens. Don't ask me to tell you what happens. It's not pretty at all. It is, it's bad, folks. It's bad. And so I'm thinking about raccoons. I got it figured out for my chickens, mostly. I've got the raccoons, and we can talk, one day we're going to talk about how I'm solving the raccoon problem for my chickens. But you know, I'm worried about the chickens and the raccoons, and lo and behold, I got corn coming up, and the corn is just about to make, and you know what? Dadgummit, the raccoons, I got this beautiful corn forming. And I go out there and I think, man, what's happened to this corn? Oh, I should have known. The raccoons, handy little fellas that they are, you know, they got them little hands. And they just stand, they pull the corn off the stalk and they eat it right there. I mean, something else. And my corn's here, and there's a field of corn over there, and the raccoons don't touch the corn, you know, a quarter mile away. What's the difference? Well, let me tell you something about animals, and it's a good time to talk about it. Because I've been getting lots of calls from people with raccoon problems, people with squirrel problems, and I can tell you we create our own animal problems, and animals are a big deal. It's worth mentioning again in the hopes that it will solve some problems for me. You know why I have raccoon problems? Look, there's raccoons out there in the world. One raccoon here or there, you're not going to notice. But when you get dozens of raccoons around your house, that's when it gets to be a problem. Squirrels, yeah, you're not going to notice them till you get dozens of squirrels. And why is that happening? Because we feed the raccoons. We feed the squirrels. We feed them with every time we feed the birds. If you're feeding a lot of birds, you got all that high oil shell stuff on the ground. The rats and the squirrels, they're closely related, are going to go after all those shells. You're going to have a terrible squirrel problem. You're going to have a terrible rat problem. Of course you are. Because it's like the rats thinking, God, these folks love me. They've been putting all this food out here for me. Oh, man. Come on, buddies. This is a great place to be. The raccoons. You feed your cats outside. You feed your dogs outside. Well, what do you think the raccoons say? Hey, guys, look at this. These guys love us. They leave these plates of food out here for us. And it's high-protein food, man. And you begin to concentrate your raccoons and your squirrels, and they do crazy things that they would never do in normal situations. Just a word of warning, just thinking about it. It's something I deal with a lot. It's something people ask me questions about a lot. I've been having to think about it this week. But lots of things are going on well. My chickens are growing. I got the raccoons figured out. I haven't got them figured out in the corn quite yet. We're working on that one. We're going to talk about that one a little later on if it works out. But I got it figured out for the chickens. You want to know how I figure out how to protect the chickens? We'll talk about that this morning. Hey, we're going to talk about the trees. We got a live oak. We even got somebody talking about chaining themselves to the live oak. My buddy Jim Walker. Sounds like something Jim would do. We're going to talk about that tree here and what it means to the city and how we deal with the city's tree ordinance and how cities and everybody needs to deal with trees around their houses. And we're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Listen. I'm bringing this raccoon thing and the squirrel thing up. It's a personal problem. I know. It's my personal problem. I think I got at least a handle on it. We're trying several experiments with the raccoons. The dog, no question. If I had a dog that could stay where these plants were, that'd be great. Right now, I don't want to get another dog. And, you know, the dogs we got, well, you know, we've turned them into, you know, house dogs. They sleep inside at night. That's kind of unfortunate, isn't it? So the dogs don't help a whole lot where it comes to the chickens, but there may be some other solutions. I've got a chicken tractor. If you don't know what a chicken tractor is, let's talk about it. Some of you want to know what kind of chickens I got. I think the chicken thing is important. It's worth talking about. Worth thinking about. Why do I have to have chickens? Let me tell you why. It's starting to drive me crazy. Because chickens are so efficient in the garden. If you can harness them. And so what you need to do is chickens will eat. If you've got cutworms and fall armyworms that are infecting your plants, that just driving you crazy, you got ticks. You put the chickens in there, they clean out the bugs, man. They just clean them out. It's great. You got weeds coming up in your flower beds, or in your vegetable beds where you got to plant things. Put them in there. They're going to clean those weeds up. They stir the ground up just a little bit. They tilt it without digging too deeply. Just that little bit of surface, just tilt it. Like turkey, like quail, they're gallinaceous birds. They just scratch around. They're doing all those nice little things. Get the soil in perfect shape. And you know, the other thing is, when they've eaten all those worms, you know what they do? That's right. They poop. And you know what? That is fertilizer, folks. It's just great. Don't have to worry about nitrogen. It's really interesting. And then, you know, you get eggs. It's cool. It's neat how many different things a chicken can do. There's not a dog in the world that does that many kinds of things. And you don't have to do a lot of training with chickens. They just kind of do all this naturally. So the question is, how do you keep the chickens where you want them to work? You have a chicken tractor, which is a portable coop. A portable coop. And we'll talk about that a little later in the show if you're interested. Everybody decides, oh, well, Grandma and Granddaddy had a big stationary coop. Well, okay, that's fine. But a portable coop makes a whole lot more sense. And I'll tell you how to make one. And you got to think about it. It's really cool. But you have a portable coop. You just drag the coop with the chickens in it, just slowly on a sled, to the new place every 2 or 3 days. You get them in the place you want. It doesn't spread diseases that way. The chickens don't start circulating their own diseases in their pen, which happens when you put them all in one place. They have lots of fresh new scratch. It's kind of an ideal system. We'll talk about that later on. And it keeps them from raccoons. We'll talk about that. Earl, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, great. My wife has about a 50-foot stretch of bay lilies, and it's grown up with a lot of grass in it. And I was wondering if some fall, could we dig those plants up and get all the grass and weeds out and then just replant them the same day without hurting them?
Yeah, you could. I would. Here's what I would do, though. I'd wait till this fall. It's kind of the ideal time to do it. Can you just hold on for a while?
Yeah, I don't want to do it right now. It's too hot out there to do this.
It's too hot. That's right. There it is. That's the better reason. Listen, let me tell you something about daylilies. Daylilies are the toughest plants in the world when it comes to just digging them up and spreading them around. You can, I used to say you could dig them up and throw them within a reasonable distance of dug ground, and they're going to take root. And you can just throw them randomly in the yard, and it seems like they root in. So you got no problems. I just wouldn't do it in this hot weather, but this fall, man, it'll be the easiest and smartest thing to do. Just take them out, separate them. Fall, I would say September, October, late September and October is a great time to do it. Okay. That way you know you're going to get some root growth. You'll have plenty of time to get some root growth. You're going to get plenty anyway. But go ahead and do it September, October. You'll have to water them a little more because October's dry. But I think that'll be a fine time. Wait for the days to begin to cool off in late September, early October. Go ahead and dig those daylilies. And just separate them really good because there's going to be all kind of grass rhizomes in those daylily roots. Wow. So don't feel bad about it. Just separate them really good, and then it's going to be a big chore replanting them all because you're going to get tons and tons of offsets. But you're going to have three times as many daylilies as you had before when you separate them. So
okay. Well, I appreciate it.
All right, Earl. Good luck on that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you know, it's there are a lot of things you can dig up in fall. It's kind of a great time. And fall, remember that fall on the Gulf Coast starts really that first, let's call it the last of hurricane summer in late September. In early October, hurricane summer is kind of diminishing. We're seeing the last of the hurricanes. We're still getting a little bit of moisture from those tropical storms. But the night temperatures are beginning to cool off a whole lot. And by October 15th is the official start of fall. But it's really easy in late hurricane summer and in early fall to begin moving those plants. Great time to do it. Really wonderful time to do it. Yeah, so Dan is sending me pictures of the sneaky little devils, and there are lots of them. They're caterpillars that are going to be getting onto your plants. It's a good time to begin looking for them, thinking about how to control them. If you've got any questions about what to do about that, you give us a call this morning. They can be sneaky. And, Dan, that looks like, I can't tell, but I'm going to guess it's some kind of army worm. That is on your tomato. Dan sent me in a picture, it's an issue. There's somebody else sent me in a picture showing a tomato that has been pretty well stripped of its leaves. You know what that is? Ooh, yes, sir. There it is. It's a tomato hornworm. Now, something happened to the tomato hornworm. He's not there anymore, I don't think, but. Give me a call this morning if you want to know what to do about those tomato hornworms. Brian sent me a great picture of a chicken tractor that he made for his little cousin, and it's a great thing. You got wheels on yours. That's a good thing. One thing to remember when you're building chicken tractors is that you want to be able to move it around, and if you want to move it around, don't make it too excessively heavy. And I got some suggestions for that. It's kind of fun, and it makes it a whole lot easier to move your chicken coop if it's not too heavy. Greg, those garden tomatillos look great, and they're doing really, really well. Tomato worm, Dan says on there. You know, it's the tomato worms are a problem because they do get in right at the tops, right where the flowers are, and they go straight for the tomatoes. One thing, when you start seeing tomato worms, you know there's going to be a bunch of them, and you look for those little tomato worm eggs. They're not going to be in the middle of the plant. They're going to be right where the flowers form. They're going to be right at the tips. I mean, they got good sense. They're going for the tomatoes. They're not going for the leaves, unlike the tomato hornworm. Those tomato worms, which is a different thing, are going for the fruits, and they'll dig in, and boy, will they make a mess. They will just make a mess, just like they do. They're related to corn earworms, very closely related, just like they mess up your corn. They're going straight for the good stuff. They're going straight for the fruit. So what do you do? Well, when you start seeing the first tomato worms, look in those fruits. Look at there at the top, right where the fruits are. Take a close look at them. And as soon as you see them, use BT. Use Bacillus thuringiensis in the form of Dipel or Thuricide. It's a disease that only affects caterpillars. It's very safe. There's really no waiting period between using it and because it's very safe for humans. It's just a disease that affects caterpillars. And you can spray it right on the tips of your plants. You don't even have to spray it all over if you don't want to. Just right at the tips, right where those flowers are forming. Get the big caterpillars off, because it's not going to kill the big caterpillars fast enough. Nothing does. Go ahead and pull the big caterpillars off. Use pliers if you don't want to use your fingers. Pull those caterpillars off. Feed them to your chickens. That's right. They love those little things, man. It's really fun to go looking for worms on your tomatoes when you got chickens, because you know the chickens are just going to love you and love them. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, welcome back. Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We're beginning to collect our tree experts. Half of them are here. We expect the other half pretty soon. And we're going to start talking about trees when they all get here. We got some good subjects this morning, so stay tuned. It's a real consequence to you what happens to trees in your yard, and we're gonna talk a lot about that this morning, and talk a lot about how trees have a hard time living with us, and why they have a hard time living with us, because we kind of get trees all wrong. We think it's we gotta be sweet to what's above ground. But, you know, folks, it's what's underground that makes the difference. And if you can't protect what's underground, it doesn't matter what you do above ground, pretty much. Chris may argue with me about that just a little bit, but I think he mostly agrees. Hey, Heidi. We got a lot of things going on this morning. Somebody sent me a picture of an elm tree, or what they think is an elm tree, located in Malbus. And it's a pretty good guess, but, you know, I don't think it's an elm tree, by the way. I think it is actually the Chinese paper mulberry, which is kind of weedy. It may be a white mulberry, but it's one of the two. It's one of the Asian mulberries, and they're kind of weedy, and they come in a lot. I'm pretty sure it's not an elm. One of the reasons you know it's not an elm, and there are many reasons you know it's not, but there's one good reason. Look at the base of the leaves. And with most elms, the base is what they call unequilateral. That is, one side is shorter than the other. It's kind of weird looking. You know, it won't be even along the base. One side will be noticeably shorter than the other. It's like it didn't quite develop right. But that's typical of elms. And there you go. Somebody has sent me a picture of the crop that's going to save Alabama. hemp, which is not going to save Alabama, folks. Feeding it to chickens probably won't make a difference. Dan, boom. It just scared the hootie out of him. There he is. And, you know, he hides pretty well. That's why you look for the poop. Dan looked for the poop on his tomato down below his tomato plant that had been stripped of leaves. There were a bunch of little green cylinders. And you know what those little green cylinders mean? Kind of dark green. It means you got a tomato hornworm. So Dan's doubly blessed with worms. He's got the tomato hornworm. And it looks like this tomato hornworm, Dan, is infected, maybe infected, with a parasite. So that's kind of interesting. I'll have to take a look at that. Big tomato hornworm at the bottom part of his plant, and at the top part of his plant, he had tomato worms. Hey, JP, thanks for holding on.
Good morning. How are you doing,
Bill? I'm doing good.
Jen, tell me something.
Yeah,
tell us all about staking versus not staking tomato plants. What do you suggest?
Well, let me say that staking a tomato plant is always something I've never been proficient at doing. It's very hard, and I think it's kind of a mistake in our climate. It makes a lot more sense. There's a reason commercial growers stake their tomatoes, and it doesn't usually benefit the average person. The best way to deal with tomatoes is to put them in a cage and not to try to stake them. So there's lots of different ways to make cages. I make a cage. Here's how I do it, JP, now. I take three good stout sticks and make a teepee that stands about 8 feet tall. Tie them together at the top, or, well, 7.5 feet tall because I can't reach 8 feet. About 7 to 7.5 feet tall. Tie them together at the top and then run string around them. Plant them in the ground, tie them together at the top, and then run string around them and let the tomato grow through it. And it's a perfect way to grow a tomato. And that way you don't have to tie the tomato up everywhere. And that's my tomato cage. A lot of people use tomato cages made out of reinforcing wire, the kind they use for concrete. And that's great. It's just a little hard to get them to stand up straight, and they tend to blow down good in the wind. It's a little bit of a problem. So I've never actually staked a tomato, but I always provide my tomatoes something to climb on. And to me, having a little teepee or having a cylinder is the best way to do that. If you leave them on the ground to roll over the ground, they are so hard to deal with, because the tomatoes tend to rot in contact with the ground. You can't weed around the plant very easily. I think you have a greater chance that you get fall armyworms and other things that live on the ground infesting the tomatoes. So, yeah, I'd put them in a cage, but I don't stake them. Did I answer the question the wrong way?
Have you ever heard of somebody using like pine straw or a lot of leaves underneath and let them rest, the limbs rest on the leaves of the pine straw?
I have, and you could certainly do that. Of course, tomatoes, when you allow them to sprawl, can spread a good distance if they're happy. But yes, you could do that, and that would work okay. It's probably going to make it more difficult to spot the worms and there's going to be a lot of different worms, and particularly in contact with the ground, I think you're going to get a greater likelihood, again, of the fall army worms. So there's some downsides to letting them crawl across the ground. It's doable.
These that I know about would mainly rest on the, a good part, I guess, would rest on the pine straw leaves, and then, of course, they would gradually grow up. So I don't know when the fruit appeared. I guess it would bend down and lay on the pine straw.
It's most of the ground is most of the fruit's going to be on the ground, and you know you'll get most of it if you've got. But there are downsides to it. I mean, it certainly, in one way, makes it easier if you can mulch that large an area, if you've got enough mulch to mulch a large area. And I'd mulch about 6 feet all around the tomato plant, at least.
Yeah.
But there are downsides because of the bugs. And also because the humidity is inevitably going to be higher that close to the ground, and high humidity, constant high humidity without any breezes is going to encourage a lot of diseases, including early blight, which is always takes out tomatoes late in the season. Why it's called early blight, nobody knows. But so you're going to get early blight, much bigger problems with early blight. So it's doable, but maybe it's going to cause its own problems.
Yeah. Bill, it's good talking to you. Thanks for the advice. Have a good one.
JP, you too. Thank you. Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Am I on?
You're on.
Hello? Oh, yes, sir. Sorry. Wasn't sure if you heard me or not. First of all, I got to say, if I were a raccoon, and the chickens, of course, going for the hornworms, and chickens also going for corn. If I were a raccoon, I'm thinking, chickens and corn, buffet, right?
right.
My question, though, is seriously, elephant ear and cannas. Have both in a bucket of water and are doing just fine right now. But even though I grew up with elephant ears, in fact, there's a photo that I will not describe of me under 2 years old, okay? But it's kind of like a Garden of Eden thing, right?
Right.
regarding elephant ears. And the cannas, I just love them. I just think they're wonderful, and I have places that I can use them eventually. But I need to put both the elephant ear and the cannas into containers for later replacement.
Yeah.
So is now a bad time or a good time, or what kind of advice have you for me?
The sooner you get them out of that water, the better they'll be. It's very hard to kill an elephant ear. Let me be clear. I wish it were easier to kill an elephant ear, because I would have killed a lot of them that are growing like weeds in my yard.
That's why I want to containerize. That's right.
They grow well in they grow well in wet. They grow well in dry. They just grow. So no matter what you do, the elephant ear is probably going to survive, but it will do better if you go ahead and get it in a container. It does not like being in that water. The canna lilies are tolerant of the water, but they're going to rot if you leave them in there for very long. And so I would go ahead. They're more tolerant than most plants, but I'd go ahead and pot them up too. I mean, both of them are going to do much better potted up now rather than being left in the water.
Great, and I want to do this with both of these plants. Although I don't want them to just run rampant. I got plenty of plants that are already doing that. I want these because they're large and they will screen things. Like neighbors have made some changes, and the back of their trash can and the back of my trash can, kind of thing, to in very close proximity to each other, is why I'm asking.
Well, and elephant ears in containers, I think that's a great idea. It's a great idea. Elephant ears in the ground, I think that's a problem because, man, are they a nuisance.
I got enough already.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Taxman is asking me, he's got a bunch of caladiums. So he's got a bunch of caladiums. He planted them in pots. And he's kind of wanting to know what to expect. You know, I think they're going to do fine. And caladiums actually love that really highly organic soil that you've got them in, the mostly pine bark. I think they're going to do just fine there. They're going to root out really well. I do think you're going to have to fertilize them a little bit, of course. But I think they're going to do really, really well. And I think they're going to look pretty. They do. They grow pretty nicely in containers, by the way. All right, we're going to be back here in just a minute. Levee's gonna break. And when the levee breaks, I'll have no place to stay.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Lots going on. Chris Francis is here with me, and that's good because we got some questions about trees this morning, a lot of different ways. And I know we've got a caller who wants to ask about trees, and I want to get to that. Let's just set this up for just a minute, okay? I want to frame this discussion. Because the most important thing we can do for our trees in Mobile, there are two important things, very important. The first is we got to protect the roots. There's some pruning issues, there's some top issues that we need to be dealing with that are very important. Chris Francis is here. Man, he's the expert on doing all that kind of stuff. You know, He acts like a spry young, and he'll climb to the top of a tree for you. You ask him to do it.
not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore.
I get in the tree every now and then, but I'll find myself doing a lot more lower trunk evaluations and a pile of paperwork.
That's right. That's right. So as we get older, we don't climb as high anymore. But listen. Chris and his crew do it really well. They deal with the top part of the tree. But the problem is going to be most tree problems develop in root systems. And this is where we have a huge number of issues. If the tree isn't growing well, it may be because the soil is so compact that it can't grow well. The roots can't actually develop. You know, we have this vision of trees as having a root system that goes straight down. But no matter how many times we say it, I think folks aren't hearing, tree roots grow out from the tree. And I'm not talking about 15 feet. I'm talking about I find tree roots from trees 100 feet away from the tree. If you've got a big tree in your yard, I guarantee if you live in a reasonably sized suburban neighborhood, you've got the roots from your tree are in your neighbor's yard and maybe in your neighbor's neighbor's yard. That's how tree roots grow. They grow out really far from a tree. And so one of the problems is we don't see those roots, and so we tend to focus on all the wrong things. And we're going to talk about the implications of that when we come back. There's a caller, though, who has a question about a tree. Let's go to that caller. I'm listening.
Go ahead, Mary.
Hey. Mary? Mary, you there?
Yes, sir. On the radio because I can't hear you.
All right. So go ahead. You ask
a
question.
I have a beautiful tree. I think it's a live oak or water oak because it never, the leaves stay on it all year round. It's beautiful. The problem is the tree itself is on my property, but the roots go on to his property and is pushing up his privacy fence. He wants to replace his fence, But we can't because of the roots. If we take those roots up and then mulch it and dirt it back, do it right, will it kill my tree?
Let's paint a picture. How close is your tree to the fence?
How close is my tree to the fence?
Yes, ma'am.
It's leaning on the fence.
Okay, so it's very close. Okay. And how big around is your tree?
It's not a very big round trunk, but the tree itself is beautiful. And we need to take some limbs off because when you bring your automobile in the driveways, you have to be careful with it. I think we can take just prune some of the limbs back. Because it's shaped like an umbrella.
Yeah, so the limbs will be easy.
He wants me to have it cut down.
Yeah, the limbs will be easy. If you like the tree, I would not be looking to cut the roots. Not saying we don't ever cut roots or there's not a good reason, but in general, we probably should be shying away from cutting roots. So if there's a way to carve the fence out, a little bit shorter on that piece and make the bottom of it come on top of the roots, then that's going to be a whole lot better.
We can't.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to prune those roots.
I can't take the roots out. I mean, the roots is growing under the fence and is pushing the fence down.
I see. It's leaning against the fence.
He wants to replace it, but you can't. We could just take those roots out. They're not very big. On my side, they are. They big, huge roots.
Sometimes. Well, I was going to say.
Listen to your answer on the radio because I can't hear you. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
So, sometimes we can get a picture painted pretty clearly and be able to come up with a pretty good answer. I'm really trying to imagine her situation, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be a good idea to cut those roots. But that if it gets hairy, if it's, anywhere in that gray area, it might be best just to have an arborist out there to lay eyes on it and figure out what the situation is and kind of go from there. But I'm really leaning towards not cutting those roots.
Yeah, I from everything she said, I'm envisioning this tree that's very close to the fence, because she's actually saying it's making the fence lean over. So I can tell that trunk and the root flare itself is making the tree lean over. And if the tree is that close to the fence, there's no way to trim the roots.
Yeah, so
I would. You could leave a gap, in the fence where to allow the trunk to expand. Or you could cut the tree down. But cutting the roots would be a big mistake, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And so, in general, cutting those roots off is not only going to cause some health problems for the tree. You're going to see some dieback. You're going to see some yellowing. You're going to see some issues, maybe more susceptible to, insect pest or fungal decay or something like that. But then we got the structural side, too. And so those roots are holding that tree up. They're anchoring that tree into the ground. And so when you cut those trees off, then we're going to increase the likelihood of that failure of the tree. So, there's a lot of reasons that are really leaning towards not cutting roots, especially that close to the tree.
Yeah, and Mary, if you cut those roots on his side, which way the tree is going to want to fall if it ever falls? It ain't falling to his side. It's coming your way. So, I don't think you want to do that. But have an arborist look at it if you can, somebody who really knows trees, not just a mortician, not somebody who knows how to take out trees, but somebody who's a certified arborist who knows how to deal with living trees and keep them healthy and keep them alive. Yeah, have somebody come by and look at it. You know, I know we have a couple of other callers that we're not going to be able to get to this hour because we've run out of time and because you all want to hear the news. Surely you want to hear the news and the weather that comes up on the hour. So if those callers will call back, when we come back, we're going to have that magic combination in the studio. Chris Francis and Peter Toler are both going to be here to talk about trees. We'll be back.
You can take all the tea in China.